Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Rebecca, and I will be your host for today's forum. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Nobel Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships for students of all majors here locally in Washington, D.C., and in 35 countries around the globe. The Institute also offers classes, our nation's only campaign management minor, week-long excursions to Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite you to go next door to our office or online to our website at hinckley.utah.edu for more information. The title of today's forum is Community Engagement, Creating Community Well-Being. I will now turn the time over to our moderator, Ashley Davies, who will introduce our guests. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ashley Davies from the Benyon Center. The Benyon Center fosters lifelong service and civic participation by engaging the university with the greater community in action, change, and learning. The Benyon Center's diverse program ensures there's an opportunity for everyone to become engaged. I specifically involved today as the mediator because I am a Service Learning Scholars, now called Community Engaged Scholars Program. And I got involved my freshman year, and I'm currently working on my ISP project to graduate in the spring. And I found that combining my academic coursework with my service learning makes schooling more enjoyable, and I learn much more as I have grown and visited the community in those different ways. Today we'll be discussing community involvement through the Family and Consumer Studies Department. Our panelists today are Marissa Diener, Loretta Rudd, Brittany McLeod, and Dee Dee Murphy. So first, Marissa Diener is a developmental psychologist. Marissa was awarded the Distinguished Faculty Service Award in 2011 for her engaged teaching and research. She earned her master's and PhD in developmental psychology. She is interested in community-based research as an avenue for social change and promoting social justice for underrepresented populations. She is currently a professor in the Family and Consumer Studies Department. Next is Dr. Loretta Rudd. She is a clinical assistant professor with the Early Childhood Special Education Program with a joint appointment in the Department of Family and Consumer Studies. Loretta earned her PhD in 2003 in education psychology from Baylor University. She is passionate about early literacy and taught for 12 years in Texas and California. Next is Brittany McLeod. She has been working with refugees for the past 5 years. She started working with refugees as a tutor at West High's Upward Bound program. Shortly after graduating from the U of U in cultural anthropology, she spent a year as an AmeriCorps VISTA with the IRC creating their job development training program. After her year of service, she started working with the Catholic Community Services as a job developer slash trainer and has been there ever since. And last is Dee Dee Murphy. This is her first year in the graduate program in Human Development and Science Policy. She is working as a research assistant at the iSTAR project, as well as being Dr. Beverly Brell's assistant for her service learning course development in infancy and childhood. Currently, she is a passionate volunteer at Shriners Hospital and at Primary Children's Hospital. So we'd first like to start off with some prepared questions and then move into questions from the audience. So let's go over to our panelists with our first question. Why do you teach using the service learning pedagogy? Why are you involved as a community partner or a student?
Okay, I'll start. So I'm Marissa Diener, a faculty member in Family and Consumer Studies, and I've been teaching community using community engagement for a long time, and I started doing it as a way to make my class more interesting because I realized lecturing about child development, I think child development is really fascinating, but it's a lot more fun when you can see the course concepts in action with real kids, and I would have some kids come into my class sometimes, but if you can see every concept and just be working with children while you're taking my class. I think it's a much more meaningful way to learn about the course material. So that was my initial motivation, to learn, to help students have a more interesting, meaningful experience with the course material. And that is one reason, and a main reason that I use it, that it helps students apply what they're seeing in my courses with the real world and in a real world setting. I also, since then, have learned that there's a lot more to it than that, that students get a different perspective, that they get out of their comfort zone a lot of times. They learn a lot about themselves, not just about the course material, but they learn through reflection and through being in different situations and hearing from different perspectives. They learn what jobs might be good for them. They learn about their own perspective, their own biases maybe. They hear about other people's perspectives. So it's a way not just to learn about the course material, but also to be involved in the community, to provide service. We're pretty advantaged here at the U, and to be able to give back to the community is another reason that I use it in my classes.
Pretty much said everything I would have said, I started employing a community engaged aspect in my classroom, in my class of human exceptionality, just because many of the people who take that class are not special ed majors, and special ed majors understand individuals with disabilities. However, I had a lot of students in there who had absolutely no experience, and so I wanted them to understand what the concepts we were talking about in class, how those related to the real world. And through doing that, then several of them actually have changed their majors to be special educators, so that was exciting to me. So it's kind of a recruitment tool in a way. But again, just so I like it so that students can see the real application of the concepts and constructs that we were talking about in class. And then it benefits the community, as you've said. There are plenty of special educators who really just need an extra pair of hands in their room at different times. And so I have students involved in working in different settings. Some are in school settings, and then some are working in group homes with adults, individuals with disabilities, and they have found, many of the students have said that that experience truly changed their lives and the way they thought about individuals with an exceptionality. So I passionately believe in it.
Okay, so I made some notes so I wouldn't forget anything. But, well, first of all, I think that most people want to give back to the community. They want to volunteer. They want to help each other out. But then they kind of get caught up in their lives, and there's time constraints, and they kind of just get bogged down, and they don't even know where to start, you know? And as I was thinking about this, I remember when I was younger, and when Hurricane Katrina happened, we had this donation drive in school. And me and my friend, you know, most people would just donate the stuff, like the change out of their pocket. But we wanted to do more, so we went out, and we went and canvassed the neighborhoods. Will you donate money? You know, we went door to door, and we ended up, like, we spent all day doing that, and we donated it back to our school. We brought it into our class, and, you know, I was just like, that was really cool that we did. No one told us that we had to go out and spend hours just helping out, but we did that, and we felt so good about it. I'm like, you know, that was really cool we did that, and so I just think it's, once you have, like, the incentive, because I don't, if there wasn't a drive going on at our school, like, we wouldn't know where to send the money. I mean, we could try and look it up, but it was just the, like, concept of being there, and it made it a lot easier. And I know I feel my best when I'm helping someone out, and it's really nice to have that feeling of value and that you can do good for others.
I'm Brittany. I'm with Catholic Community Services, so I'm more from the community perspective, and my first thought when they asked the question was, I am so jealous of you guys, because I wish that I had that when I was going to school. And maybe I did, but I didn't. It probably wasn't advertised as well as it is now. And I think it's an absolute critical part of students' education. And I actually am an advocate for having it be a requirement. Like, I feel that it should be a requirement. And the reason is I work in job development with refugees, and one of the two things that we find in the workforce is that not only do you need an education, but you need experience. And I and the reason is because with that experience, you learn how to do your job well. And if you couple that with the theory of what you're being taught, with your experience, it's unstoppable. Something that I feel that this curriculum and this program does is it teaches them the theory. It teaches you guys the theory, and then you guys are put on the ground. And when you're on the ground, it's a whole different learning experience. I've had a lot of our volunteers at the end come back and say, I did not know that this was going on in the community. I didn't know about this community. I didn't know that there were these issues. I didn't know that I had to problem solve a lot more. And if I was to be thrown right into the workforce, I would have had the theory, but this adds to what I've learned, and it was so beneficial. So I'm a total advocate for the program.
Thanks. So how does learning or teaching from the service learning pedagogy benefit FCS students, or in other words, benefit the community as well?
Sure.
Oh, go ahead. Well, I think it should benefit both. That is the goal of community engagement, and community engaged learning is not just that the students benefit or that the community benefits, but that it works for everyone, and the faculty member also benefits by having students who are more engaged, who can contribute to the discussion. And I learn a lot every semester, too, from my community partners. Brittany comes into my class and says things, and I'm like, oh, wow, that's really good. I'm glad I know that now because I didn't before. So hearing that perspective it's so valuable. So I think students improve their learning, that like we've talked about, they learn about themselves. The community partners, I think I try to at least design my classes so that the community partner gets something. They build their capacity. So in a lot of cases, it's a situation where they're working with children or they're working with families, and they're a nonprofit organization. They don't have the capacity to work one-on-one with those families on a weekly basis or with that child. So a child who needs extra help or needs extra attention, and every child needs extra attention. That's what helps kids develop. So it's a student being able to provide that, which builds the capacity of the organization. Or, I mean, we have other classes where they're not working one-on-one, they're working with the organization. In that case, maybe the organization is getting a service that they wouldn't be able to pay for. They're getting a survey done for them, or in our survey research methods class, or they're getting an evaluation of one of their programs. So there are lots of ways that students can contribute. I think even though they're volunteers and it's often on a semester basis, but not always, that they can contribute to a community organizations.
Again, same thing. It's like, stop, you're saying half of what I was going to say. But FCS believes in this community engaged learning so much that we are actually creating a position, a coordinator of community engaged learning, so that we can provide more opportunities for students to be involved in the community, and for the community to benefit from those students being involved. And as Dr. Diener said, just the idea that an organization, a nonprofit organization, might need an evaluation of a program that they've been running to ensure that it really is the kind of program that benefits those individuals who are participating, but they can't afford that kind of evaluation. Those are expensive. We have students in graduate level course that is part of their coursework, is to conduct an evaluation of a certain kind of program. So the student benefits by actually being able to apply the knowledge that they've learned in class, and the community benefits by getting a service that they may or may not be able to pay for before that. And so we have evaluation, we have survey research course that students go out and conduct surveys for different organizations, and then we have some of our students working in classrooms or with other agencies like that. So I think it's definitely mutually beneficial.
And yeah, I agree with all that you guys are saying. I know, well, a lot of these points you guys already made, but I mean, it's really nice going out in the community and learning the stuff instead of like learning everything, but not having to learn it in the classroom atmosphere. And most of the stuff you can't even learn in the classroom atmosphere anyways, like my hands-on experience working with kids. And I feel like most people, like from their experience, they are pleasantly surprised that they're getting actually more out of this than what the community is getting. You know, they're like, wait, I'm getting more out than, you know, like they feel like they have learned so much. And like just an example, it's like we live in such a great state and most people don't realize how privileged they are and they don't see these struggling communities. And so when they go out to these communities, they all of a sudden see all this awareness and it shows them a more accurate and complete representation of the world. And they're more thankful and their whole perception changes and they're more willing to help out these communities that really need it. Okay.
I think it's how we benefit is a lot of, I know from, I can't speak for all nonprofits, but I know for our nonprofit at Catholic Community Services and even when I worked at International Rescue Committee, we, with nonprofits in general, a lot of our money comes from donations and grants. And sometimes that's bountiful, sometimes it's not. Some we have to compete for grants, so sometimes we don't get the money. And so we're really limited in our resources, and we can usually only offer the core services, but the core services don't cover everything that our clients need. And so what the volunteers can come in and do is provide other resources, be able to help me teach my classes, create curriculum. We had, I think it was through service learning, we had somebody create a first aid PowerPoint that was taught in one of our health classes that we just don't have. We can't go out and pay a developer to do that. On a more personal note with a story, the cool thing about the University of Utah is that you not only cater Americans, but there we have a lot of international students as well, which is so important. With our simulation, with the American students, they have been absolutely, with your just, you know, 20 to 30 years of living in the United States, has absolutely been a critical cultural friend in helping our community assimilate into America. On the flip side, the international students being here for a couple of years or going through similar situations have been absolutely critical in saying, this is what worked for me, this is what didn't work for me, this is what I've learned about this culture. And they trust them a little bit more as compared to me who sees them every day and they're like, yeah, whatever. you know, so it's absolutely, you guys are our lifeline. You also make it more efficient for us. We can do the work without volunteers, but it's a little bit more messy. And when we have volunteers and interns to help us, we're able to be more efficient in our work and we can focus on really important things. So you're absolutely critical.
Can I just add one more thing that I was thinking of? Another, and this isn't a skill that you can, I mean, you could get this skill in lots of different ways, and you could get it in the classroom, not just the community, but learning how to work in a group and problem solving, I think, is a really big part of community engagement, working on a group project and figuring out, you know, negotiating roles and problem solving. I mean, there are a lot of challenges that come up when you're working with a community partner that are the challenges that you face when you have a job, and getting those skills is, I think it's a really important part of community engaged learning, is being in the community and working with other students, working with the community partners, figuring out how to communicate with them, how to negotiate. All those problem solving strategies that you learn are helpful.
Perfect. So how is your class involved in the community based upon your perspective?
I my class that I'm teaching right now that's community engagement is called Parenting Across Cultures. And we consider whether parenting is universal or culture-specific, what practices are specific to cultures, and we look at the diversity of parenting in our own community. And it's really hard to teach. I mean, I just have one perspective on parenting. That's the way I was raised and my background. And I can't provide students a different perspective without them interacting with parents from other cultures. That's what the whole class is. So it's hard for me to think about how to teach the class without the community engagement. On the other hand, it's really hard to find families or find organizations that work with parents that students can be involved with. So that's a constant struggle and challenge for me with the course. So that's the course that I'm teaching now. I've also done the child development course that I mentioned. And I'm also involved in the community with my research, and that's important to me to be in the community and be answering questions and asking questions that the community thinks is important and that will have an impact on our local community rather than just something that's far more abstract and removed. I forgot what the question was.
It's just, how's your class involved in the community?
Oh, involved in the community. Okay. And I also work with a lot of graduate students who are involved in the community, so it's not really class. In our department, we have classes that are community engaged, but our students are engaged outside of classes as well, and that's another part of community engagement.
Well, I know, I'm like, how do I answer that question? The courses that I teach are not identified as service learning or community engaged classes. I just have that component within the class. So in my human exceptionalities class, those students, I actually encourage them to find a way. They have one of their assignments is a project. So students choose all different kinds of settings to complete that assignment. And it's several assignments. So they're involved that way. And then, like Dr. Diener said, I work with graduate students off campus as well who are in student teaching type settings, those kinds of things. And my research is in childcare, so I'm involved in being engaged in the community in that way. I don't know if I really answered that. But.
So the class that I TA for right now, it's the service learning class. Since we have 40 students participating all around the valley, there's the neighborhood house, there's Head Start, the Children's Center. And so since our class is focused on the development in infancy and childhood, so we wanted to focus in on these children. And many of these are like children of low-income families, so it's really important to be a positive role model. I just remembered from taking, when I was in Marissa's class and I had the service learning there, I remember some of the kids, I was at the Heartland Community Center, and those kids never even thought about college until they would see us and like, oh, you're in college? I want to go to college, you know? That sounds cool. That sounds really fun, you know? And so it's like also just providing support for them can make all the difference in their lives, you know, just being a positive role model.
We're having a hard time with
it's
this.
All good. It's good. This one was probably more based off of classes involved in the community. That's so I don't know if you want to talk about any that you had when you were when you were here, if you could think of any.
I didn't, but to put a plug in for AmeriCorps, it's probably similar. You know, and you know, I did my degree in cultural anthropology and I loved everything that I learned, and it was amazing. And I still write my teachers, though, because when I went to do AmeriCorps, I was like, oh, my gosh, this is so different than what I learned. But I was just so surprised, and there was just such a wealth. And it would have been nicer to have that cushion to be able to, you know, not just be thrown into it, but to have that volunteer cushion to ease me into it so it wasn't as big as a shock, because the work world is a huge, like, I worked during school, but it was in, you know, it was as a camp counselor, it was as a work study. The workforce is extremely different, and it's important to get as much exposure as you can when you're in school to couple with your education.
And one more question. How does your class meet the community's needs, or how do you think the community needs are being met by these classes coming to you?
Well, I hope it's meeting community needs. I think I make a point of sitting down with the community partners at the beginning of each semester and talking to them about what their needs are, because I don't always know what their needs are. So figuring out together how students can meet their needs is an important part of the process, so that it does meet their needs. And it does seem that when I don't meet face-to-face with them and really have a discussion, if we just email or we go back and forth, maybe talk on the phone, there is more likely to be a mismatch between what the students are doing and what the community partner expects, or what I expect and what the community partner, the kinds of experiences that they can provide for the students. So it is important to negotiate that and make sure that it's helping the community partner. So I try to do that, and I try to keep the same partners so that I have a relationship with them and I have a better understanding of their organization and what their mission is and how students can play a role. It's also challenging because there's a lot of turnover in some of my community partners, or there are staff members, and I get a great relationship with one staff person, and then by the time I teach the class a year later, they've got a new position or a new job, and they're not even at that organization anymore. So that's one of the challenges. But I think communication is the key to making sure that you're meeting the community needs.
Yeah, and just matching students, their ideas, the ideas of the class, and with the community partners that need those kinds of services and can provide the opportunities for students. So again, communication on the part of faculty, student, partner, I think is really important. And you know, sometimes the students don't have any idea of what or where they really want to do their student learning. So I spend some time talking with them about what are you interested in, what are your past experiences in terms of working with individuals with disabilities. Some say, I don't know, I've never seen one, I've never worked with one, I don't have any idea. And then I have places where I think they can really benefit from being exposed to that, and that partner isn't necessarily doesn't have a specific need. They're really there to provide a learning opportunity for the student. Those who have some experience and know an idea, then I try to pair them with a partner who has specific needs in terms of really wanting extra bodies to work with children with disabilities or an adult with a disability. So really matching up the experience, I think, can be, again, mutually beneficial.
Okay, so I'm probably going to steal some of your thunder, but I think it's really important to have these volunteers, because most of these community partners, they're not really able to function without, like, either they run solely on volunteers or without, if they're short-staffed, it's a completely different experience for their target population. So it's really important to the functioning. And most of these communities, they can't get this experience, like these services, from anyone else but you. So it's really important that you show up and that you volunteer. You take the time to actually involve yourself. So I was also thinking, I just remembered this, but there's a project. Most of the classes, they have a project, and the whole purpose of the project is to get, you're supposed to get the community partner, like, what did they need? So when I did it, we did a video of, I don't want to talk too long, but we did a little, they were doing this virus dance. And so we videoed them doing it and them practicing it, and this helped them get funding later on. You know, it was a good informational video, like, hey, this is our program. This is how great we are. This is why you should fund us and all that stuff. And so just having that project at the end of the year really helps fulfill their needs. Like, maybe they need blankets and you could do, like, a blanket drive. Or maybe I remember another girl in our class did drums, and that was really cool and really fun. so... Also, it's just really, we also do things like for the refugee population, it was really helpful to teach them bus routes or just even helping them translate, you know, teaching them things in English, you know, just helping out the families a lot. And it just overall, it helps make, like, for the students, you're more productive and valued members of the community after this experience.
Plug in, we need bus route volunteers. That's probably our biggest need. I agree. I think they are meeting the needs. The cool thing about volunteers is that they're not only coming in and doing the work, but each volunteer has their own skill sets and qualities that we benefit from just as a byproduct. I've had with each of the, I think I've had probably 5 volunteers over the past year. And with each volunteer, they've been able to not only do the work, but bring other qualities to the position that we couldn't see were needed, or personalities that were able to mesh with a certain client that we were struggling with. Like if we had a client that was really difficult, this, one of the volunteers got along with the client. We're like, yes, you take him and you go work with him. And so it's just like your personality and your qualities are so needed. And one of the volunteers that I truly have enjoyed working with as well, I think sometimes when you're a volunteer, you might be a little intimidated, like, I don't want to step on any toes. I don't want to give my ideas. I don't want to, go and change a program. But those were the volunteers that came in and had ideas and had ways to change the program and to build curriculum and to make things better that I have really valued and did not want to let go. So this is also an opportunity for you to go in for a couple of weeks at first and really get an analysis of a fresh perspective of what you think is going on and share your ideas and your thoughts and ways that you can make it better. We really value those type of volunteers.
Great. We'll now devote the remainder of the time to questions from the audience. If you have a question, please speak directly into the microphone and state your name and major as well.
Hi, my name is Sadaf Bogbani, and I am a master's student in public policy. I guess my question is kind of aimed towards those of you who teach, but also the volunteers that you get within your organization. How do you draw the line, or how do you teach your students the difference between being engaged within the community because you feel bad for the disadvantaged person, because it makes you feel good, and, you know, actual systematic change? I mean, do you emphasize that, especially within communities that are not as advantaged as others?
I think that's a really good question, and it's something that I spend a lot of time thinking about and talking to my students about. I think it really varies in terms of the level of the class and what we're able to do and how much systematic change we're able to do. So I worked with a master's student who, she changed a whole program. I mean, she talked to the women who were involved in the program, and they provided a perspective on the way the program was structured, and now it's structured completely differently. So she was able to do that system change. It doesn't always happen. So even though we can talk about what the systems are that need to change, working with a population or in a community, we can't always change it. And I think just having students recognize that, or even being aware of what the systems are that might be perpetuating the challenges for the families that they're working with, is a start. So I'm not always able to do that. And I would love to be able to, but that's been a really challenging thing for me. So I think that's a really good question on how to do that. And policy might be one way. And you probably think that's a really good way too. And I believe that, but I also do, I am aware, I mean, I'm always worried, am I creating more harm than good? I mean, if I send a student out there and they feel sorry for the client, or they are perpetuating the, I know more than you about this, so let me tell you what to do. I mean, that is always a fear of mine. I've had students that they're working with kids, and the kids, they don't show up, and the kids think it's because it's something they did, and it's not. So that's a real concern, and I don't know. I don't think I have any answers to that.
Yeah.
Do you?
No, I do not have answers to that. And most of the work that I've done thus far doesn't lend itself to really changing a system. But throughout all of my classes, even ones that don't have a community engagement aspect to it, I really speak passionately and directly about the need for advocacy and the need to focus on systems that may need change, whether that be policy change or whatever, and then to pursue that throughout. I encourage students to look at every course you take and every time you have a writing assignment to really see how you can meet the assignment, but through your lens, the area that you choose to advocate for. So that's probably how I would think I address it.
I think that, like, from my perspective, I think that there's different stages of involvement, and I think that an important stage is recognizing a need or feeling bad about a certain community. I mean, I was that way when I first started working with refugees. You know, I was, in a way, kind of naive, like, I'm going to go change the world, and this is all going to be solved, and there's going to be no war, and, you know, which I think is important. And then when I got into it, I kind of hit the ground and was like, wow, this is so complicated, and there's so much that needs to be changed, and there's so much policy that needs to be corrected. But I wouldn't have been able to do that unless I was interested in a certain group. And I think that, you know, and I think the other thing is when you start working with disadvantaged populations, I think the cool thing is that, like, when I went in there, I was kind of like, you know, I'm going to help you, I'm going to do this. And then you realize there's so much that, like, you kind of feel like the teacher. Like, you feel like, oh my gosh, I know nothing. And this person just went through 20 years in a camp, 10 years in a war, walked thousands of miles. And you start to realize that they're not disadvantaged people. They're survivors. The homeless are survivors. The refugees are survivors. And when you can get to that point, I think is when you've really reached your potential as a volunteer.
What ideas do you have?
my boss right here would probably have a much better answer than I would.
I work for the Office for Education and Community Partnerships for Diversity here at the University of Utah. And I just, listening and doing work within the community, also knowing many of our students of color here on campus who are continually doing community-engaged work, right? It's not a set program in which they volunteer. It's not something they do once a year and come away from, you know, feeling really good about helping these disenfranchised communities at times. It's something they do. It's a continual part of them. And I think what I've seen a lot within the West Side and in rural communities and those other communities here in Utah, a lot of times it's that communication factor that you were speaking about, which is an incredibly important factor. And I think that continues to be probably the biggest one when it comes to doing engagement and outreach and kind of coming to the point as to why you really are in that work or doing that work. And I think with that communication, in whatever partnership or collaboration in which you do it, I think there's a tendency for some students, they want to get involved because they do see a community, they're like, oh, I'm kind of interested in that. I do feel that I would have a partnership in that, or I'd like to see more or learn more about that. But I think it, when teaching students or talking to students about their engagement, it's more about not just you have a desire to go out into that community or to learn more about that community, or you feel like you can help with that the issue or whatnot that you're engaged in, but it's more about how do they learn the reciprocity, right? Is there really a need for me to come in? And what does that community or that partnership really, what are they really saying when they say, well, you know, we could use some help here, use some help there. I think, again, it just goes back to the communication factor and really kind of considering why do you want to do community engagement and getting to the heart of that desire and going forward with that, I guess is my comment.
I think for the age group that we usually work with, I think that that's just part of their human development is figuring that out. And I think that the great thing about service learning is that there's opportunities where they're able to not only be exposed to the world, even if it is a little bit, I mean, even if you know, you don't need a lot to get a cold, you don't need a lot to get a desire to help people. And I think that that's even with service learning, even if it is for a short time, they're catching that bug. And I think it's great for their human development to be exposed and to also kind of know where they fit. I think that certain communities out there have certain needs, and just like other people, there are certain qualities. If they might fit in with refugees, it might be really too difficult and strenuous, but they can go and they can help maybe the homeless, or they can help after school children. So I think that that's a great opportunity for them to kind of figure out where they fit in as well.
All right, my name is Chase Hansaker. I'm an accounting major, and my question's more towards you that works for the Catholic. You said that you saw a big difference from what you learned in school, uh-huh. and then when you went out to the workforce. I feel like in my major, at least, it's more black and white. Like, this is what you do, and you go to the workforce, because I have my job now. I can see, you know, I can apply it a lot easier, and I can see how yours would be more difficult. What would you say the biggest change is, and how would you recommend for them to fix it within, like, the learning of the classroom? Is there a way to fix that?
Well, my degree is hard because it was cultural anthropology, and a lot of the anthropologists have to go to, like, a whole different nation. And so, and unfortunately, I wasn't rich enough to do study abroad and get scholarships for that. So my next best choice was AmeriCorps. And I think the biggest thing, and this is why I'm such an advocate for service learning, is I didn't even know where to start. Luckily, this kind of felt like my experience going into the workforce kind of just fell into place. But I just didn't even know where to start. And I feel like if we're able to connect people to community, I didn't even know that refugees really existed until I was in AmeriCorps, and they've been coming here since Vietnam. And how sad is that for me as a cultural anthropology major to not know that? But I didn't know the resources, and I think that, you know, the good thing is that we have full-time people, faculty, staff that are working to get you out into the community, to identify these partners, and to know where you should work. I think the biggest thing is that was new to me was just culture isn't black and white. And I learned that really quick. And what I learned in the textbook about certain cultures and the history, I realized that doesn't go from here to there. And that was a huge shock. And you're dealing with individuals. There's a lot of psychological things as well that you're dealing with, because you're dealing not with the culture but also with individuals. So I wish I had more training on, more applied. I think my degree was more theory, and there is applied cultural anthropology, not to go into much, but I wish that there was more applied courses where I could have gone out into the community, been exposed. I wish another thing that I think is awesome is having individuals from the community come into the classes, in refugees, you know, people from, students, people from the shelters, people that are actually living in those, and give accounts of what they're going through. I think is also important. So having people from those communities come in and tell about their experiences, I think, would have helped a lot as well.
My name is Paul Brenner. I can understand how the volunteer process could be a slow process, but how do you know if you're actually making a difference? Like, how do you start to see things that start to change and for the better?
For a whole system or for
just any kind of volunteer process with whatever you do?
Well, I think you see change over time. So volunteering on a one-time shot, you're not going to see the change or the impact typically. But extended amounts of time, and that's why in a course that has community engaged learning, rarely would you be sent to do one activity. Usually you are there on a routine basis, usually a weekly basis. And so over time, I all of my students who've been engaged in the field have come back and said that they saw change both in the individuals that they worked with, because my students are pretty much paired in a classroom with children or at a group home setting. So they've seen changes in those individuals, but also in the organization, just in the sense that they were able to provide up-to-date kinds of knowledge that they've learned in their coursework. So I think if you're there for an extended amount of time, you will see change, and change in yourself, for sure.
And I think it's usually through relationships that you build. So you can do a project, but the project isn't going to be really good for the community unless you know exactly what they're looking for and what they need. And so that's through the relationship that you build with hearing from their perspective and understanding it or getting to know someone. So I think that's usually where you have an impact, is by building a relationship with the community partner or the people that you're serving, or and you can't do that in a moment. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the one-time activity either.
I'm not either. And like, to go on to that, one of our pet peeves at our organization is when people send hygiene kits, because it's like we have like a million of them, but for some reason that people think that that's what they need, you know. But there's resources, and so when people come in and do the one-day project, it's kind of like, okay, you know, goodbye, hello, you know. But like she said, when people come in and they care and they're able to see what the real issues are, then they know what to help with.
Hi, my name's Kylie. I'm a biology major. And my question is just kind of about these one-time projects. Do you feel like they are important in getting people's feet wet, getting them into a community where that first time they spend a couple hours with the community and that's where they really see, wow, I really can make a difference, and getting their feet wet to want to do more?
Yes, if the individual doing the one-time project is willing to listen first, not come in with their idea of what the community needs, but go in and be able to talk with the group that they, you know, whatever agency it is that they're wanting to work in, and listening to what their needs are, and talking about what that student, what are your strengths? I mean, there are students whose strengths really are all that technology stuff, and there's an organization who needs, as I think you mentioned, a PowerPoint. That would be great. But just to go in there and say, well, you know, I created this little program and it's great, and I want to come in and do this little dance thing with your kids for, you know, this one-time shot. I don't think organizations necessarily like that. I think they are willing to accept those kinds of projects because they're hoping that there will be a sustained kind of commitment. And I don't think it's as enriching as, but yes, I think it could lead to a better understanding. It might be a first step, but I would want the student to really listen first and then plan something outside of that.
I mean, I don't think you should never do a one-time thing. I've been involved in many one-time events, and I think we met a need in the community. I mean, they got their garbage picked up or their trees planted or whatever it was. So definitely there was a need that was met, and it was good that we did that. But I just don't think the meaning will come as much from that kind of experience.
Okay, we have one more question.
Okay, I'm Cassie Ansel, and I'm a communication disorders major. Forgive me if you've already answered this, but I know I have a feeling that you two are professors, and I know that you have been talking a lot about volunteers and how you need them a lot. As far as your classes, do you look for volunteers more outside of your classes as well, or are they mostly based inside of, you know, your class, I guess? And then my question is, how do you let other people know that you need volunteers? How do you advocate for that, I guess? That's my question.
I started out just with my classes, volunteering with community partners. And it's really built and, you know, it's now pulled me into a lot of different directions. So my research and working with graduate students and far outside my class is involved now with community engagement. But that all happened through relationships I built and community partners saying, oh, hey, listen, do you have a student who could maybe spend a little more time? Oh, well, let me see if I do. Let me ask around. Let me connect with some students. Here's a match. Oh, no, that didn't work out. Here's another maybe match. Oh, that did work out. So it has grown that way through as I've gotten more involved. But we don't really advertise like, oh, we're doing this. You know, we have this project. But we do have some if you're interested. We're always looking for more help and more people.
And on that note, within our department, because we've talked, Dr. Diener is involved all over the place, and it's kind of grown. And then there are some of us who've just recently moved here, and so we're not as involved in the community as we might like to be. And so within our department, we really are working to have a more coordinated effort so that we each, because faculty tend to get in their office and do their thing, and there might be a little talking with your next door neighbor, but not across the whole department. So we're really working to have a more coordinated effort, know where each person's working, and then hopefully we'll be working towards being able to advertise some of those kinds of opportunities that are outside of a class. I mean, within a class, I think it might be difficult to include someone in that kind of engaged learning, but some of those projects that are happening outside of courses, I think we could certainly do a much better job advertising and really soliciting more volunteers.
Unfortunately, I'm not the volunteer coordinator, but I do work with a lot of volunteers, and I know that from my experience, it is a lot of partnering. Like, I'll email her and I'll say, you know, Miko was amazing, send another student like her, or we work a lot with InterNexus, which is an English school, and so they have people come in as well. And then what I notice is that it's a word of mouth. So if somebody really loved working with us, they go to the students and say, hey, you know, sometimes we've had, you know, emails that said, my friend did this opportunity and I want to come. And so we're like, great, come over. Other than that, the volunteer coordinator just does regular networking, such as, you know, Facebook and going out and talking to community partners and going to different churches and community events. But other than that, it's a lot of partnering and a lot of word of mouth that we get people in.
Okay, great. So if you would like to become further involved in your community, please come to our next Saturday service project, Saturday, October 20th, at Surnemu. For details, please visit the Benyon Center website at benyoncenter.org. Please join me in thanking our panelists for coming today. They did a wonderful job.
Thank you.